asked to a spiritual exercise that we could probably benefit from, maybe this week more than any other. We're going to talk a little bit about fasting. And I do want to tell you and remind you that we're not going to talk about all of the things that the Bible says about the subject of fasting. If you would like, we can get together and we can talk about other biblical information that bears on the subject, but we're not going to have time to talk about all of that today. We're going to talk a little bit about fasting as a spiritual exercise. And it's an exercise that, as we've said before about meditation and prayer, it focuses our thoughts on God. If that's not the purpose that we're trying to accomplish with our exercises, then we miss what the Apostle Paul said to Timothy. Exercise, spiritual exercise, is an exercise that leads to godliness, and that's really where we want to go. So we're going to talk about fasting and how we can use fasting as a spiritual exercise that will lead us to godliness. Now, it's also important to understand that we're trying to improve our performance. We're trying to improve our ability to live for God. That's what this is all about. We're not talking about fasting so that we can lose weight. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about today, although it might help you lose some weight. We're not talking about fasting to improve your overall health. That may be true, but that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is focusing our thoughts on God and improving the way that we're able to walk as we live on this earth toward God. And then finally, there's one more thing that we always have to remember when we talk about these spiritual exercises. These are things that I decide to do for myself. This is not something that God commands that I do. This is something that we might find helpful, that we might find useful. And we know, for instance, when we look at fasting as it's described biblically, that a lot of godly people practice fasting. If we were to look back in the Old Testament and begin in Ezra, we would read about one of the men who was a leader of God's people as they returned from the Babylonian exile. Now, understand the situation that they're in. The city of Jerusalem is in ruins. It has been devastated. And they are understandably distraught because of what has happened to the great city of God. As they encounter the city, it so impresses them that many times they would fast. In Ezra, the 8th chapter, beginning at about verse 21, you read about the people that came with Ezra. Now, Ezra and Nehemiah are two of the people that led people back to the city of Jerusalem from Babylon when they were given permission by Cyrus. And Ezra and his group are described this way. Ezra says, I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava that we might humble ourselves before our God to seek from him a safe journey for us, for our little ones and all of our possessions. I was ashamed to request from the king troops and horsemen to protect us from the enemy on the way because we had said to him, the hand of our God is favorably disposed to all who seek him. But his power and his anger are against those who forsake him. So we fasted and we sought our God concerning this matter, and he listened to our entreaty. This is a dangerous time. The city is in ruins. Ezra, the cupbearer to the king, is taking a group of people back. Cyrus says, I'll send troops to protect you. And Ezra says, we don't need them, because our God will take care of us. He'll watch out for us and our little ones. He'll get us safely back there. And they fasted. They wanted to be keenly aware of what God was doing in their life. Nehemiah, the first chapter at verse 4 beginning, Nehemiah, of course, he's also leading a group of people back. He says, when I heard these words, talking about the words, the report that had come to him about the terrible shape that Jerusalem was in, Nehemiah says, when I heard these words, I sat down and I wept, and I mourned for days, and I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. I said, I beseech you, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who preserves the covenant and his loving kindness for those who love him and keep his commandments. Let your ear now be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant, which I'm praying before you now, night and day, on behalf of the sons of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the sons of Israel which have sinned against you. I and my father's house have sinned. We've acted very corruptly against you. We've not kept the commandments, nor the statutes and the ordinances that you commanded your servant Moses. Remember the word that you commanded to your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the people. But if you return to me, and you keep my commandments, and you do them, though those of you who have been scattered were in the most remote part of the heavens, I will gather them from there, and I will bring them to the place where I have chosen to cause my name to dwell. There your servants, your people, whom you redeemed by your great power, by your strong hand. O Lord, I beseech you, may your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant, to the prayer of your servants who sought to go delight to receive your name, and make your servant successful today. Grant him compassion before this man. They're disturbed that their great city is in ruin. And they know that it's because of what they have done, well, not them personally, but because of what the nation has done, that God has seen fit to take them into Babylonian captivity. Uh-oh, what did I do? There we go. I have a new pointer, so I have to get used to this new one. Forgive me if I make things go away here. But Ezra and Nehemiah, they are people that understand how serious the situation is. Daniel, the sixth chapter, Daniel, the ninth chapter, and at verse 3. We talked about Daniel and his habit of praying, didn't we? We know what kind of man he is. Daniel, the ninth chapter, beginning at verse 8, Daniel is encouraging his brethren. He's encouraging those that are around him to serve God. But in the middle of all of that, Daniel gets stuck with this problem. The king has this wonderful food that he eats, and Daniel doesn't want to eat it. So Daniel says to Ashpenaz, Ashpenaz is the servant of the king who's charged with keeping track of Daniel and the other exiles while they're down in Babylon. Daniel says to Ashpenaz, we'd rather eat vegetables. Ashpenaz says, oh no, you can't do that. That's paraphrasing a little bit. Ashpenaz says, look, it's my head that's on the block here. If I don't take care of you well and you guys wind up getting sickly, then I'm in trouble. Do you remember what Daniel said? Made this deal with Ashpenaz? He says, I'll tell you what, for a week, let us just eat vegetables. At the end of the week, you look at us and see how we're doing. If we're not doing well, then we'll eat the king's food. Ashpenaz says, okay. Everybody remember what happened? Daniel fasted, for he ate just vegetables. He didn't didn't eat the king's foods. He abstained from eating the king's food. And when Daniel did that, he prospered. He looked just as good as the rest of the exiles. In fact, in some ways, Daniel and his friends looked even better. Daniel wanted to be sure that he didn't forget about God. And so he decided he would abstain from the food that the king was providing. Nothing wrong with that food. He just didn't want to eat that food. He wanted to keep his thoughts on God. Look at the church in Antioch. The early church, of course, they're people of God. They're godly men and women. And they're getting ready to send out some teachers. In Acts, the 13th chapter, it says, there were in Antioch, in the church that was there, prophets and teachers, Barnabas, Simeon, who was called Niger, Lucius of Cyrene, Menahem, who had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch, and Saul. And while they were ministering to the Lord and fasting, the Spirit said, set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work which I have called them. When they fasted and prayed, they laid their hands on them and they sent them away. That's a serious time. Things are not just as easy for them as they might have been for others. So they're getting ready to send out teachers, and they know what a difficult thing this is going to be. So they fasted, they prayed, they laid their hands on them. They sent them out with their blessing. Think about what happened in Galatia when the Apostle Paul was getting ready to appoint elders. Again, it's serious business, this appointing elders. In Acts, the 14th chapter, beginning at verse 19, it says, Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, having won over the crowds, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. When the disciples stood around him, he got up and entered into the city. The next day he went away to Barnabas and Derbe. After he preached the gospel in that city and had made many disciples, they returned to Lystra, to Iconium, and to Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith, and saying, through many tribulations we must enter into the kingdom of God. When they appointed elders for them in every city or every church, having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed. That just seems to characterize the way that people behave when they face momentous decisions or dangerous situations, or they face those situations in which they have to clearly delineate their relationship with God. Now, you also read about the Apostle Paul. Paul says, as he enumerates the things that have happened to him, that he has been often in hunger. A phrase that we understand had nothing to do with him deciding that he was going to fast, but he had found himself often in places where he didn't have enough to eat. So Paul says he was often in fastings, in hunger, shortage of food, but it wasn't something that Paul decided to do. It was something that happened to him. I'm not suggesting that it in any way pulled him away from God, but it was not something that Paul decided to do as a way to get closer to God. So just fasting is not what we're talking about this morning. We're talking about people who, because their situation caused them to have to rely closely upon God, decided to focus their minds using the technique of fasting. Now let's think a little bit about fasting, and we'll think about it from the perspective of God. Okay? God's not the fasting one. I'm the fasting one. But this is what God perceives in fasting. The only public fast that was ever enjoined on godly people in either the Old or New Covenant, not what people might choose to do to help focus their minds on God, but the only time that God commanded a public fast was on the Day of Atonement. I think we're probably all familiar with that. One of the things that we might not be as familiar with, though, is that the word fast is not in the instructions as it relates to the Day of Atonement. Turn with me back to Leviticus. We'll begin reading at verse 26. The Lord spoke to Moses and he said, on exactly the 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall humble your souls and present an offering to the Lord. You will not do any work on this same day, for it is a Day of Atonement, to make atonement on your behalf before the Lord your God. If there's any person who will not humble himself on this same day, he shall be cut off from among his people. As for any person who does any work on this same day, that person I will destroy from among his people. You shall do no work at all. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations and all your dwelling places. It is to be a Sabbath of complete rest to you. You shall humble your souls on the ninth month at evening, from evening until evening, you shall keep your Sabbath. The word in the King James is afflict your souls. That's the concept of fasting. In the New American Standard, it's humble your souls. It's not just abstaining from food. It's broader than that. Now, by the time of the Apostle Paul in Acts, when the Apostle talks about the coming of this Day of Atonement, wasn't something that he practiced because he was Jewish, but the Apostle Paul talks about that day being a day of fasting. It had become a day of fasting, abstaining from food, but that wasn't the original instruction. The original instruction is much broader than that. It was humble yourself or afflict your souls. And just as an aside, when we think about fasting, we ought to be thinking about more than just abstaining from food. It might be that you choose to fast by abstaining from the internet. It might be that you choose to fast by abstaining from your phone. I read something the other day. Did you know that people are more likely to leave a child in a car than they are their phone? That's why they put warning buzzers on your phone so that you'll remember not to leave your children in the car. People said that they would rather skip a meal than not have their phone. Maybe abstaining from your phone. Abstaining from television. You could abstain from using your car and decide on one day you're going to walk. Fasting might be abstaining from food. It might also be other kinds of abstinence. And understand that that's within the meaning of this word. Humble your souls. The instructions about the Day of Atonement don't include the word fasting. Interesting. It's the only time that it was commanded, though. Now, they made some foolish additions to what God had said. In Isaiah 58 chapter, you read, beginning at verse 1, the way that the Israelites had abused this notion of fasting. It says to the prophet Isaiah, cry loudly, do not hold back. This is God speaking to Isaiah. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their transgression and to the house of Jacob their sin. Yet they seek me day by day. They delight to know my ways. as a nation that has done righteousness and has not forsaken the ordinance of their God. They ask me for just decisions. They delight in the nearness of God. And this is what they said. This is the way that God puts it. Why did we fast and you did not see? Why have we humbled ourselves? Remember that term, humble ourselves. That's from Leviticus, the 23rd chapter. Why have we humbled ourselves and you do not notice? And then God responds, behold, on the day of your fast, you find... you find desire and you drive hard all of your workers. Behold, you fast for contention and strife and to strike with a fist. You do not fast like you do today to make your voice heard on high. Is this a fast which I would choose? A day for a man to humble himself? It's not for bowing one's head like a reed. Is it for bowing one's head like a reed? For spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed. Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? You see, they were fasting. They had added something to what God had said. And it's as if they were seeking extra credit. God said, fast on the Day of Atonement. And they did. At least they abstained from something on the Day of Atonement. But at the same time, they abused their workers. Kind of like keeping the Sabbath. It became a habit of the Jews to seek out non-Jews that they could hire in their business so that they didn't have to shut their business down because they couldn't work. Well, they had done the same thing with the fast. They abused their workers. This is not what we're about. But that's the way that they had approached it. They were just seeking extra credit. And beyond that, it was fake. So seeking extra credit is bad enough, but when it's fake, it's even worse. What about in the eyes of our peers? You know, when I fast, should I expect people to see it? You know, what a godly man I am. I didn't eat Thanksgiving dinner like everybody else. No, that's not really it. And of course, we're familiar with Matthew, the 6th chapter, and what Jesus said. When you fast, don't go around all down-faced. He says, when you fast, wash your face. Don't let anybody see it. That's not what you're doing. You're not doing it to shame somebody. You're not doing it to prove how great a person you are. You're not doing it so that you get accolades. You're doing it because it brings you closer to God. And so, for the most part, as far as our peers are concerned, fasting is unnoticed. Now, remember what we said? This is something that I choose to do. It's a technique that I can use that will cause me to be more godly. To be more godly just means that I'm going to think more clearly about the things of God. So, understand, this is not something that God commands. We have commands, and we have to keep them, and fasting, or all of these spiritual exercises that we've been talking about, are ways that we can help ourselves keep those commandments. They make us stronger. That's the performance that we're trying to improve. So what can I learn from fasting? Well, in the first place, I can learn that I can rise above my wants. even reasonable wants. There's nothing unreasonable about wanting to eat. But I can rise above that. I don't have to be controlled by my wants. I'm one of those people that Kim says I'm sick. I go to work, and Kim would call me up and say, did you eat lunch yet? And I'd go, well, I don't know. I'll go check in the refrigerator and see if my lunch is still in there, and I'll let you know whether I ate or not. Okay? Not everybody is like that. Some people, it gets to be lunchtime, and they've got to go eat lunch. There's nothing wrong with that. But I can rise above that. My wants are not going to control me. No matter what those wants are. There's nothing wrong with wanting to know what's going on in the world around us, is there? And for the most part, we use the television, we use the internet, we use our phone to stay in touch with the culture in which we live. The group of people that we interact with. Kim is so good about staying up with what's happening to people that she's been in contact with ever since she was in high school. And those kinds of things are great. I could turn it off if I want to. It's just, if you get to the point where you can't turn it off, something's wrong. So, think about fasting. We can rise above being controlled by the things that we want, even reasonable things that we want. Okay? The second thing I can learn about myself is that sometimes I'm going to face momentous circumstances that I cannot eliminate from my life. No matter how strong you are. You cannot eliminate momentous circumstances. And those circumstances will cause you to fast. It's a way to deal with it. When I was in the hospital, Kim, of course, spent time in the hospital. And I know one of the things that she appreciated most about one of the people that came to see her in the hospital was they brought her a sandwich. Have you ever been in those situations? You're so concerned about what's going on that you just kind of forget to eat? Well, you're not going to eliminate those situations. I wish that there was some way that we could say that we could, but we can't. Those situations are going to arise. And fasting is a way of dealing with it. And then the last thing that I think we could probably learn about ourselves is that afflicting my soul, humbling myself, or fasting, if you will, if it's my choice, can enhance my ability to focus on what really matters. It's not food. Now, you have to eat. You can live for about 3 weeks without food. You go for about 3 days without water. But you don't have to be controlled to such an extent that you forget that there are some other things that are more important than that. God, your relationship with Him. And because the other distractions that exist in our lives sometimes so overwhelm us, we forget that we need to think about God. So fasting is a way to remind ourselves, perhaps, of what's really important, and that I can get myself to what's really important. There's a lot of value in that. It may be that so many distractions exist in your life that you just You never think about God. I know that you think about God at least some because you're here. But I know that you probably want to think about God more. So maybe fasting can help. Might be a way to think about your relationship with the things that are around you. As I said, there's a lot more that we could talk about when we talk about fasting. And if you'd like to do that, we can arrange a time when we can somehow do that. But this just kind of scratches the surface. And it touches on how fasting can be a spiritual exercise for us. It may be that you need to return to God. You need to ask for God's forgiveness because you've not lived the way that you should. And you know that you've let God down. If that's the case, then pray to God. He has promised that He will forgive. No matter what we have done, His grace is far greater than anything that we've messed up. And if you want to have a relationship with God, fasting is not going to get you the relationship. Remember what the Apostle Paul did when he was still Saul? He, of course, had the encounter with Jesus on the road to Damascus, and then he went into Damascus, and what was he doing? He was fasting and praying. That wasn't going to get him to the point that he would have the relationship with God. What he needed to do was listen to what Ananias said to him when Ananias said, "Now why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized and wash away your sin." Fasting won't get rid of sin. That's going to take baptism. And if we can help you to do that, we have a pool here. We have clothes that you can wear. We can take care of that right now. It may be that you'll get home this afternoon, you'll think about it, and you'll say, "Wow, I really need to have this relationship with God." 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you call somebody, we'll baptize you. Middle of the night, call somebody, we'll help you be baptized. But give your life to God. We want you to think about that. We're going to stand and we're going to sing a song together. Raise your hand or say something to somebody after we're dismissed. If you want, you can come down to the front. But let somebody know that we can help. That's what we're here for. Let's all stand and sing a song together.